Hello, my name is Elaine Barrett, and back on the 2nd of July, I went on one of NASA's Level 9 VIP tours. They cost $80 a person, but believe me, folks, it is more than worth every penny. Only 12 people a day can go on this tour, which means that you have to book in advance. But I tell you, we saw things on that tour that 99% of the tourists who go to NASA in Houston never see, because only the Level 9 tour goes to those places. It was mind-blowing, and I certainly recommend it to any who would ever want to go to Houston and see NASA, which is, if you're into outer space, pretty much everybody. Now, I'm going to just talk about some of the things I saw there and what our guide told us. Believe me, there was a lot, since our tour guide knew everything. The tour started out in Building 1 near the back. For those of you who haven't been to NASA, that's pretty much the main tourist welcome center and kiddie area. There's a theater there that gives presentations, gift shops, some models, and plenty of really cool things for kids to climb on and interact with, jungle gym style. They also have a full-size model of a shuttle cockpit and some of the working areas which you get to look through. It's amazing how little space they actually have inside there. They have switches everywhere. I mean, covering every available surface. Little switches. I don't know how they keep them all straight. There's also a cafeteria there and a place where all the different tram tours leave. We had to sign in at the information desk and get our little VIP badges, the one time I've been a VIP in my entire life, and then go to the tram area to meet our guide. Now, let me tell you one thing. Houston in July is hot and humid, and the NASA tram cars are open jobbies without fans or air conditioning. We VIPs, however, got our own van, complete with air conditioning, a fact we were all extremely grateful for. We were all remarking how wonderful it was to just walk past all the tourists giving us very dirty looks, I might add, as we skipped the long line entirely. Those dirty looks, I think, turned into telepathic death threats as we climbed into our van and waved to the little people. You know that wave the famous folks do where they move their hand as little as possible? After that, we headed off to lunch. Now, here's something you might not know, but there are cows at NASA. I'm serious. They have a herd of Texas Longhorns at NASA, and believe me, those horns are huge. You might wonder why. Are they training cows as astronauts? Do they have some arcane use for the horns, like unicorn horns or something? Are they marketing a new type of astronaut ice cream steak flavor? Or perhaps they plan on shooting a steer out the airlock if a UFO passes by. Sorry, folks, but nothing so exciting. The cows are there simply as an ongoing project with local schools. Had you going there for a moment, didn't I? Our first stop was for lunch in the cafeteria area right next to the building where the astronauts have their offices on the top two floors. We probably ate lunch in the same room as the astronauts, but we couldn't recognize any of them anyway. None of us knew names and faces. Probably should have gone to the website to do a bit of memorization beforehand. Now, that was cool enough, but I tell you folks, that food was fantastic. I mean, our tax dollars in that instance went to really good work. We were all saying that the food made the trip worth the money on its own. We all have had cafeteria food before, and, you know, who hasn't? But this stuff was fresh, well-cooked, and there was a really good variety. There were salads, soups, baked potatoes, sandwiches, and various ethnic specials. Tilapia, I think. I myself had a bowl of this beef vegetable soup with non-mushy veggies and real chunks of steak, and also a baked potato. But pretty much there was enough variety of food that anyone could find something they liked. Perhaps eating in NASA put an extra spice to lunch, but really, it was good. We had an hour to eat and visit the little gift shop they actually had inside the cafeteria. Not sure why they had one, considering the only tourists who visit the area are the 12 VIP tour guests each day, but perhaps it's an easy way for employees to buy NASA gifts for their friends and families. Anyway, after lunch, we piled back into our nice air-conditioned chariot and made our way to the big tank, also known as the Sonny Carter Training Facility Neutral Buoyancy Laboratory. It's not actually located on the NASA campus. NASA got a really good deal on land outside campus, so they built it there. I believe aircraft were manufactured on site before. Any of you see that movie Armageddon with Bruce Willis? Yep, that tank. Armageddon was actually filmed in that tank. I think it was the first movie ever to do so, but I could be wrong, so don't quote me on that. Our tour guide had a funny story about Bruce Willis during the filming. They have an observation platform with windows overlooking the tank and TV monitors with sound hooked up so they can, you know, hear and see what's going on under the water. Now, while they were filming, they had Bruce on the system they actually used to talk to the astronauts and vice versa for authenticity, I believe. Anyway, he was doing this scene and cussing up a storm. Unknown to them, a school group of little elementary school students was set to tour, and in they walk. Some little children learned their first swear words from Bruce Willis that day. They had to make a phone call or some such to tell him the kids were there and to ask him to clean up his language a bit. Anyway, back to the tank and tour. I believe our guide said it's the biggest swimming pool in the world and is kept at a temperature of 80 degrees Fahrenheit for the benefit of the drivers who go down in there with the astronauts for safety purposes. It's 40 feet deep, and I forget exactly how long, but it's long enough for an almost complete model of the space station, full size, to be down in it. The only part they left out was the part the Russians work on. They have that part in their tank in Russia, and if the U.S. astronauts really need to work on it, they sort of just fly over there. I know there is a full model of the station there because I saw it along with actual astronauts working on it. Really cool. They had two teams of astronauts working in there from the next two missions to go up. One in the beginning of October is Constellation, and I forget the exact name of the astronauts or the second mission or when it goes up. Sorry, folks. They just sort of threw so much information at us. It's amazing I remember as much as I do. Both missions are set to work on the space station to, you know, repair things, add modules, that sort of thing. Incidentally, for all you Star Trek fans, the Constellation mission patch was designed by a Star Trek scene designer with the input of the astronauts and looks really neat. Believe me, I want one. I had my little camera there and actually filmed about 12 minutes or so of the group's working. They were actually in spacesuits. Not the ones they would wear on their missions, but old retired suits that had been on space on other missions. Complete suits with backpacks, fishbowl helmets, gloves, and everything. It was really neat to see and hear. It was just coincidence that they were working there when we got there. It doesn't always happen. We sat watching for a good, 30-40 minutes or so, and looking at the different TV monitors and listening into the sound. They were running simulations of different duties they'll have to perform EVA on the station when they go up. They walked and talked through it all, and we got to listen. You know, there was even people, playing the role of mission control and everything, and the astronauts talking back, walking through it all, problems, just like they would have done, or will do, when they go up. Each of the astronauts actually had cheat sheet cards on their wrists to help them remember what to do. I don't know how they were able to do much of anything, since they had three layers of gloves on and couldn't have felt anything. We got even luckier since, while we were there, one of the groups finished and was actually brought up out of the water on the lift. It took a while before they let them out of their suits because they had to depressurize or they'd get the bends. Yes, the tank is that deep. They each had a group of people there to help them out of their suits, and believe me, they needed them. With gloves that made their fingers that big, they couldn't have gotten out by themselves. The helmet and gloves came off first. Next, they took off the hood, covering their heads with all the sensors. But in order to get out of the main suit, they had to undo the fastenings that attached the legs to the chest part, and then do a wiggle down through, pulling their heads and arms through, and then back out so they could stand up again. That's when we actually got mooned by an astronaut. I kid you not. He bent over with his bum facing us at the window and wiggled his tush in order to get it out of the pants part. Then he sat down and others helped him pull the rest of the pants part off. Underneath the spacesuits, they have these white long john things that, life sensors and potty bags and tubes and everything. They work in 6-hour shifts underwater, so they gotta go. They gotta go. I actually asked what they had to do, what the astronauts did if they had to go. The suit takes care of that part. They were both really sweaty, and after he had sat down for a bit, the one who mooned us got up and did a bit of a jig in front of the pool. It was then that I really saw all the air hoses and things arrayed around his back, waist, arms, and going down his legs. It was a bit afterwards that we had to leave and move on with the tour. Believe me, we sort of wanted to stay longer. It was probably one of the most cool places. The most time we actually saw actual astronauts doing, what they actually do. The next stop we made after driving back to the main campus was the place most people want to see when they take the tour. Mission Control. Two words says it all. Well, actually, Mission Controls, since we saw three. Now, I'm not talking models. I'm talking the real deal with real people working in them while we were watching. The one we saw first was at around 2 p.m. was the mission control for the shuttle missions. We got to sit in that area with the seats looking through the glass wall onto the workers below. There were huge screens showing a map of the world and data, and each station has it its own name with its worker and computer screens and such. While we were there, they were actually conducting a simulation since there are no active shuttle missions up right now. The next one is the Constellation at the beginning of October. And that's Constellation, and it's going to go work on the space station. One of the vet ground control men came and told us exactly what each and every position did. Sorry, folks, but there was far too much said for me to remember it all, but it was very nice to hear. Makes me wish I'd had a video camera or maybe a little audio recorder. But some of the stations were Flight Director, Capcom. Capcom always has an astronaut manning it by tradition because he can speak astronaut speak and translate the technobabble of the others into orders that the astronauts can follow easily. There's also ADCO, Falcon, ECLSS, EVA, Atlas, Thor, Ops Planner, BME, Surgeon, Topo, Ground Control, and others. He actually was a surprise to the guide, too, since usually they don't come along and talk to the others. We actually were really lucky. Usually, you know, they don't have people coming out of the big tank, and usually you don't have ground control coming to talk to you, so good time to take the tour, yay! Point of note, to anyone really interested in keeping track of the huge amounts of info sent your way on these tours, bring a video camera with lots of memory and extra batteries galore. You'll want to record every little minute of it. Believe me, if I had known about all the information that would have been thrown my way, I would have seen a way to maybe rent a video recorder or something. Also, on the walls of Mission Control are all the little mission patches of the little different missions controlled from there. That was sort of a standard. That's something I saw in all three, shuttle, station, and another one I'll talk about later, saving it as a surprise. The next stop on our little tour was the Mission Control for the space station. There were the people at their stations, the big screen with pictures of the inside of the station, and many of the same stations as at the Mission Control, you know, for the space shuttle. But these were, you know, not simulations. This was the actual people running the station with no games or, you know, it was real. It was completely real, you know. These people are doing their jobs right at the same time. It was an actual live mission. But some of the other cool things that were around, you know, besides, like, the mission patches on the wall, like, are everywhere, was that each person at their station sort of had little interesting thingamabobs and all over the place, you know, to liven it up. And also, there was a chess set in there, set up. Pretty much the astronauts and the mission control people have a running game going. So astronauts make a move, mission control people make a move. So, you know, kind of fun. They're playing chess when one is up in space and one is down in Houston. So kind of cool. Unfortunately, we didn't get to do anything cool like see actual astronauts talking or the actual game, because unfortunately there wasn't a live feed going on at the time, so pretty much, you know, just saw pictures, the screen was pretty dead. When we were there, there was supposed to be a live feed starting in a half an hour, but unfortunately we had to leave before it started, so I was like, darn it, I'm going to have to go back and take that tour again, and maybe this time the station will actually have a live feed going. Or maybe we could have, you know, scheduled it a little bit better, gone to skipped mission control and for the space station and kept it for last. That might actually have worked. Oh well, next time. The third stop in that certain building was probably the one that had the deepest personal impact on me. And I'm not just talking, you know, cool factor, though that certainly was there. I'm talking, you know, more of an emotional, heavy impact, because it was Apollo. We went to the actual Apollo Mission Control Room. And we didn't sit in a glassed-off area like with the other two. We had the run of the room, and we could walk past and actually touch and even sit at the desks and consoles and look up at the narrow, dark screens where so much of our history had taken place. I mean, not just history for the U.S., but, I mean, history for the world. I mean, I sat in Gene Kranz's chair, the flight director station, and it was absolutely incredible. I mean, you know who he was. He was the flight director during Apollo 13, as well as quite a few other missions. And it's really hard to describe the feeling of actually being there, sitting where someone had sat. Well, they watched the race to the moon and Neil Armstrong setting foot on it after so much effort. And then, you know, even later on, the tragedy of Apollo 13 bringing those guys home, and then the Challenger explosion. Challenger was controlled from there, too. It was just amazing, absolutely amazing. You know, almost could feel the ghosts of these guys working at their stations, astronauts going through. I mean, just so much happened. It was incredible. Really something, you know, that alone, take away, you know, everything else we saw, and we saw a lot. I mean, the big tank was cool, but going to see Mission Control Apollo was absolutely awesome, and it's something personally I will never, ever forget. It would be impossible, and it was almost, really was impossible to top. So much history and drama packed into one little room. It's not a huge room. It's rather modest, really. There's all the consoles, a flag that was once on the moon, the screens, the mission patches, the Challenger mission patch done much larger, as well as one for Apollo 11. And one thing that I think got to me the most. It was something that the Apollo 13 folks gave the guys who brought them back home. It was a mirror attached to a plaque that read, "This mirror, flown on Aquarius LM-7 to the moon, April 11th through the 17th, 1970. Returned by a grateful Apollo 13 to, quote, reflect the image, end quote, of the people in Mission Control who got us back." It was signed James Lovell, John Swigert, and Fred Hayes. It's amazing to me that we made it to the moon at all, let alone got those three men home safely. Did you know that they had less computing power at their disposal than we have in a calculator? Those screens at the consoles weren't even the actual computers used. They're just monitors that were linked to the huge computers in another room. They had to have cartridges in Mission Control and Up with the Astronauts that had different segments of the mission loaded on them, which had to be changed out as the missions went on simply because they didn't have enough memory to hold everything. It's just mind-blowing. And I was in the room where it all happened, restored and now a national historic landmark. It was deeply moving and quite humbling. Look at what we were able to accomplish back then by working together with so little. Just imagine what we could do if we put the same amount of energy and effort with the technology we have today. The next stop was Building 9, where astronaut training occurs. It's also where the robotics department is, including a robot with a head that I swear looks just like Boba Fett's helmet. I think they're developing it along with a spider robot to go to the moon. And the spider robot, it really does have a ton of legs. I don't know how they have the computer programming to get it all coordinated so that the thing actually walks. It does walk, by the way. There also were full-size modules from the space station. The ones I saw were Kibo, Logistics, Harmony, and I think one other. And there was also a full-size model of the shuttle and the aft shroud door trainer of the Hubble telescope. One neat thing they also had was a full-size prototype model of the re-entry vehicle for Orion, you know, the one with the heat shield and everything. And that the Orion is the new project they're developing to go to the moon again and eventually Mars. And they plan on using the moon as a staging area to test out all sorts of new technology and, you know, sort of as a practice run to actually get men to Mars. And I believe they said that the date for the Mars was, you know, 2030, somewhere around there. So actually, you know, in our lifetime, men on Mars, very cool. Next 20, 30 years, NASA's tour is going to start really getting interesting. Something else they had there was something that's going to go up to the actual space station. I mean, not a model, but the actual thing was a little cupola observation platform. It's pretty much just going to stick out of the top of the space station and has lots of windows. And, you know, you can look out and peer around the astronauts and everything, and they can do experiments up there. After Building 9, we went to visit the huge vacuum chamber. And I mean huge. The door alone weighed 40 tons. I had my picture taken in front of it, and I am this tiny little dot on the floor in front of the door. The door must be close to 50 feet in diameter. They actually plan on making this thing even bigger. They're in the process of creating the telescope that is going to replace the Hubble way out farther than any man can go. I forget exactly how far, but you can probably find out at NASA.gov. I mean, really, really, really far. Mind-blowing far. We're going to be able to get so many fantastic pictures. I'm sure most of you have seen pictures at the NASA website of what Hubble takes of. If you haven't, go look. They're fantastic. Absolutely gorgeous. These pictures are coming from this new telescope they're developing are going to be many, many orders of magnitude better. I mean, we're going to learn things from this telescope about the universe and the galaxy that we can't even now imagine. It is really, really neat. And also, sort of speaking on the development of new tech, a lot of people sometimes say, why in the heck are we spending so much money on the space program when we have, you know, so many problems at home with starving and housing and all that? And one of the big things that people really don't realize is for every dollar we develop and invest in NASA in space tech, we get back eight. Because a lot of the stuff NASA develops actually goes back to into society. I mean, we wouldn't have cell phones. We wouldn't have laptop computers. We wouldn't have a lot of the technology that we take for granted every day if we didn't have the space program. And that's a lot of money. So, you know, we'd actually lose a heck of a lot more money if we didn't have the space program. So just keep that in mind. If people start grumbling about all the money we put in the space program, tell them that fact. Okay, moving on. The vacuum chamber. Okay, they're making it bigger. What they're going to be doing is that they use the vacuum chamber to create a vacuum, obviously. And then they test it in at the extremes of temperature found in space to see how the components fare. I mean, scientific types will know that, you know, you have, in the sunlight, you have extreme high temperatures. Out of the sunlight, you have extreme lows. So pretty much whatever goes up into outer space has to be able to handle both. So that's what they do in there. The new telescope is going to be way too big to fit into that room, no matter how huge it is. And it is huge, by the way. Even though we didn't get to go inside, we got to peer inside. And they're going to dig down another two stories into the bedrock under the chamber to make it bigger. Then the telescope will fit. Also, the chamber itself is also a National Historic Landmark, just like the Apollo Mission Control and the Saturn V. The Saturn V was the next and last stop on the tour. The Saturn V they have in Houston is the most complete one in existence. It was created for a moon mission that never happened because the Apollo program was canceled. It lay decaying for quite a while until a building was built around it and was restored. Birds and animals were actually building their nests inside of it before then. It's all there to see except for the LEM itself, which they said is off in a museum somewhere else in the country. I forget exactly what state I'm thinking. Maybe Maryland, but I probably am wrong considering there are 50 states. I thought the vacuum chamber was big. I know the big tank was huge, but the Saturn V rocket is colossal. They had it on its side, and it is completely astounding how huge it is. You really just can't imagine how huge it is until you're actually there. I mean, it's sort of like how people can tell you that Alaska is big, even bigger than Texas. But until you go up into Alaska, you can't really comprehend exactly how big it is. It's the same sort of thing. Every part was there except for the limb. I mean, the rocket boosters with the main tank, and then the other boosters that would push them into orbit, and finally the part that would take them to the moon, and then even the reentry module. It was all connected where, with like the parts broken apart enough so that you could see like the end where each one begins, but it was all lined up in order. It was just none of them were connected so you could see all the bits and bobs and doodads. It's wow. So worth seeing. Oh, and that, by the way, you don't have to take the Level 9 tour on, but, you know, we got there before the little peons got there. The Saturn V was our last stop before heading back to Building 1. The tour really was fantastic, and I pretty much filled up the memory card on my camera, taking pictures and video. I fully intend on going back someday and taking the tour again, and I would recommend it to anyone who ever goes to NASA. A few things to remember, though, just for, you know, people who were interested in taking it. The first thing is to book in advance. There are only 12 seats a day, so when you buy your plane ticket and hotel rooms, make sure you buy your Level 9 VIP tour tickets. You can find them by, they're at the NASA website, tours and such somewhere. The second thing is that you have to be over 14 in order to go on the tour. And parents, that includes the kids. Any kid under 14 can't go, even if they are with you. The third thing is bring a video camera and a digital camera complete with plenty of memory and extra batteries. Bring what you think you might need and then double it. You will want to take plenty of pictures and video would be the best to record the sheer volume of information they throw at you, as well as making a great family video to add to your home library. Remember, you'd be seeing things that 99% of the people who visit NASA never get to see because it's not on the regular tour. The only thing that we saw that was actually on the regular tour was the Saturn V, and that was at the very end. Well, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed my little talk about my visit to NASA. Take care, all, and have fun if you ever go there.